Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your eargasm pleasure from the fabulously fluoridated and Fukushima irradiated Island Chains Nation, and now obviously overtly surveilled Island Chains Nation of New Zealand. And it's an interesting day. We've had the GCSB bill pass. Okay, this is the NSA, as the Mexicans would say,
the NSA
of New Zealand, just basically being given whatever powers they want to spy on any New Zealanders, any emails, backdoor stuff, which they've been doing the whole frickin' time, except they've been doing it illegally, and now it's going to be legal. Now you're slaves. Good on you, New Zealand. You resisted your own slavery enough to get this legislation passed that makes you a slave. Yeah, that's basically it. And my very special guest is Neil Sanders. I believe he was in the British military and attained the rank of colonel and came up with an amazing chicken recipe. Neil, welcome to the program.
Hi. You've told my secret backstory there. Like, cheers, Vinny. Nice one.
Yeah. I'm sure you get that a lot.
Yeah, kind of. But it's fine.
Yeah, well, I'm not that creative, even at the best of times. Why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do, bro?
Well, I'm a mind control researcher, basically. I mean, mind control sort of falls into loosely four categories. One is extraction of information, sort of truth serums and that sort of thing. The second one is wiping people's memories, you know, to prevent that sort of thing for espionage and that, you know. The third is the complete takeover of a person's mental faculties or their physicality and, you know, turning them into an assassin or a Manchurian candidate, as we would call it. And then the fourth, which is a far broader spectrum, is propaganda, perception management. And this is done through societal controls, through the media, as I'm sure you know, through trends, through entertainment, through bread and circuses, sports, all that sort of thing. And, you know, it's a very, very broad spectrum of information, really.
Yeah, I'd say so. Just exactly how many people are not under mind control would be a much easier question to ask than how many people are currently operating under mind control of some kind or another.
No, absolutely, Vinny. I mean, and you know, and that's not just talking about the sort of the sort of personal mind control. You know, the sort of hypnotic control of a person like that sort of Svengali type. People don't realize that everything is a system to make them think in a particular direction. And as you sort of pointed out, almost one of the most effective mind control techniques is the fact that people think that this sort of thing is science fiction. They don't think that this is possible. I was watching a show the other day, and you were talking about what if they brought out an anti-levity device. You said, you know, what if they brought out this device that would make everybody cry and stop them all laughing. I was watching that. I thought, I know of three people that have created devices as early as the 60s that can already do that. There's several. There's Igor Smirnov, which was a Russian guy. He was using a process called psychic acoustic correction, which is very, very sort of, it's below the natural hearing sort of spectrum, but you can still hear it. And that was one particular thing. It could affect emotion. It could put thoughts and voices into people's heads. They actually were going to employ it during the Waco siege and David Koresh. They employed Charlton Heston, the actor, and they got him to record a load of dialogue, and he was going to pretend to be God, and they were going to use this device to actually blast this into David Koresh's head and tell him to end the siege. But they decided not to do this because he said if it all goes wrong, they might slit each other's throats or something like that. So, you know,
they didn't think for a moment, you know, I wonder if this guy will click on and just go, is God Charlton Heston?
Well, you know, I think Charlton Heston would say he was. But, you know, the point is that this machine, he puts it inside your head. So it's like sort of auditory hallucinations that you might get from schizophrenia. But it actually puts these voices in your head, and they're indistinguishable from your own. You know, everyone's got a sort of inner dialogue an inner monologue.
And it broadcasts on a specific frequency, so many hertz or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Which sort of brings me on to the second guy who does that, who works on the sort of extremely low frequency waves. That's a guy called Michael Persinger. He's a biochemist at Laurentian University in Canada. And he worked on the CIA's Project Sleeping Beauty, which was a sort of CIA military crossover, again, sort of putting disconsolate and desolate feelings into people's heads and making them fall asleep on the battlefield, sleep rays, that sort of thing. And again, he was experimenting on students in Canada and was able to basically make them miserable by what it does is, you know, your brain will kick out like a pattern, like an EEG pattern. When you feel like a certain emotion, if you're happy, it's one sort of wave pattern. If you're sad, it's a different sort of wave pattern. Well, through the years, through various scientists, they've figured out what these wave patterns are. And they've basically said, if we can imitate these, put them on a microwave or an extremely low frequency wave and fire them at the brain is not able to differentiate between an organic signal and one that's actually been placed there. So it doesn't just sort of imitate that emotion. It replicates the organic processes that force that emotion, and so there's absolutely no way that you could actually go against that.
Yeah. I have uncontrollable depression. Well, I'll just turn the machine off then.
Well, yeah, quite. Right. Well, turn, you know, to move away from the telephone mast for a start.
Yeah. Well, can I ask as well, do you know if there's any sort of unintentional sort of mind control things going on? Like, we were just thinking about frequencies there. What about EMF and EMR sources that are coming off of pretty much every electronic device? I've heard that can really affect people's emotions big time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of studies officially. It's one of these things where, you know, officially the government will tell you that it's absolutely perfectly safe for your well-being, but we don't believe them, to be quite honest. So the evidence suggests that particularly being around a lot of electromagnetic spectrums, Wi-Fi, smart meters, which are being introduced into a lot of places because they essentially have mobile phone technology and the mobile phone masts and that sort of thing, they resonate on the same frequency that resonates with human bones and such like that. So there is a correlation between these things being around a person and this person having a very depressed outlook or a very It causes lethargy. There's even some sort of suggestion that it might sort of lead towards sort of things like fibromyalgia and, you know, various other stuff like that. But yeah, it's bad news, man. It's like it's basically swamping us in like a soup of electromagnetic waveforms. I mean, there's certain things like PCBs, which are sort of proven to cause cancer. But aside from that, the sort of electromagnetic spectrum that's sort of put out by these, it certainly is. It's very dangerous. I mean, in certain countries, Wi-Fi is banned in schools, for example. And we know about mobile phones. We know that they cause tumors. We know that there's... I mean, they say that they don't, but the evidence is there. I mean, you can...
They've even got it on the frickin' warning labels. Like, you look at the warning label on your cell phone and says, do not hold it within 10 millimeters or 20 millimeters of your body or something like that. How the hell am I supposed to use this frickin' thing if I can't touch it?
Exactly, man. But this comes onto like a sort of broader aspect of the mind control, which is the sort of cognitive dissonance that people get. I mean, people are locked into this sort of, for want of a better word, capitalistic society. You know, they want the gadgets, they want this, they want to be competing with idiots like the Kardashians and the Wests. You know, crikey, this is a guy that named his kid Northwest. This is not a person that is to be admired. This is not a person that, like, if there was any justice in the world...
Are you freaking serious?
Exactly, man.
I've not even heard of that.
Have you not heard that? Oh, Christ. This is how stupid these people are.
Well, see, this is how smart I am. I don't follow that kind of Shiite Muslim.
You'd better have to do that, man, to be quite honest. Because, I mean, you were talking about this the other day as well. This is the concept, the aspirational notion of society. These are structures that are meant to make you feel bad. These aren't by accident. These are thought out by organizations like Tavistock and Common Purpose and the CIA under MKUltra and various other delineations of this group, the Human Ecology Fund and stuff like that. It's not... like. Civilization has been going for thousands of years. You'd think we'd get it right by now. Like, and they have, because they know what they're doing. Like, it's just that we're too stupid to realize that basically this isn't the way that you're supposed to live. And we've got all these trinkets and dangly jewelry and stuff like this. And it would, like, people have been turned into magpies, and they're just so distracted by it that they don't see when somebody's basically... You know, someone stood behind them with their trousers down and they're convinced that it's raining.
Mm. I have this aversion to things like, have you ever heard of Honey Boo Boo?
Oh, crikey. Yeah.
Crikey.
No, yeah.
Crikey, Dick. Unbelievable. Yeah. You know, it's just like you get an obese mother who's like, southern, ridiculously retarded. And her child that she gets into these beauty pageants, and she hypes her up on a mixture of like Red Bull and frickin' Mountain Dew, and you know, it's like, have you ever looked at something, and the longer you look at it, the wider your eyes get, until the point where you're wondering if your eyeballs are gonna like pop out of your skull? It's like, do I really believe what I'm seeing? What
Absolutely.
Is going on here, bro?
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what it is, man. It's like the same as all these X Factor and, like, you know, America's Got Talent, which is like the most ridiculous title in the world. And all of these reality programs, they're there to tell you that this could be you. This could be you. You, I mean, the Honey Boo Boo thing says you don't even have to have a particular talent. You don't even have to be a person, really, and we'll give you a television show. You know, come on here and show, like, how ridiculous. And this is an extension of the sort of Jerry Springer thing that was going on in the 90s, where it was teaching people it's good to be on television, and that shame and that ridicule and whatever, like, which is afterwards, which we'll never worry about later, that's worth it for this, like, lick of this golden ring, basically. And, like, come on, man, it's ridiculous. But... The point about all these things like X Factor, Honey Boo Boo, even sports, they're what's called amusement focus. And this has been discussed even by people like Zbigniew Brzezinski, like, you know, get people together, get people in teams and get people arguing about things that are basically unimportant and, you know, set up third-party advocates, authority figures, which is like an Edward Bernays thing. People that people want to worship and follow who are essentially idiots.
You know, I was just thinking this morning, funny you should mention all this, because there's a guy in New Zealand called Bomber Bradbury, and he's a socialist kind of commentator, and he talks about some of the same stuff that I do, maybe like 5%. Yeah. And he tries to keep himself firmly within the mainstream paradigm. And, you know, sure enough, he gets on national radio. He gets on the government-owned television stations and things like that. And I was thinking to myself, you know, should I start toning myself down? Should I start acting like that so that I can get the coverage? And I was like, no. I really don't want to. The only point when I will accept the mainstream television format is if I force them to come to me, because everybody's following and watching me and nobody's watching them because they're full of crap and they know it.
Yeah, and besides which, you don't want scraps from that table. You want your own table, man.
Yeah. I can build my own table. I'm going to hammer and nails. It's called Words and Force of Verve.
Damn straight, man. Like, I mean, this is the point. And anyway, this mainstream is built on a foundation of nonsense and lies and assumptions and cognitive dissonance. And, like, you know, you see that this news media contradicts itself daily. News media makes mistakes daily. And for whatever reason, mostly because there's a thing called consensus trance, which is basically like this sort of emperor's new clothes. If we're all looking around in this, the emperor's walking around with no clothes on, the first person to mention that is going to cause such stress and trauma and embarrassment with everybody else that they're going to get probably punched in the face. And so there is this psychological process whereby people go under a sort of mass hypnosis and go along with the sort of accepted truisms of the world rather than rock the boat. Because it's better to, like, you know, it's better to be outside the tent, you know, inside the tent, like, out rather than outside the tent sing in, if you know what I mean. So the other thing is when people say, another metaphor would be to, like, say when people are clinging to the belly of a beast and they realize that this beast has not got their best interest at heart, you know, what the hell do you jump off, or do you cling even tighter for fear? And again, we mentioned, like, this is nothing new. This has been since the dawn of civilization. It's just that now it's broadcast in a different way. I mean, that's one of the main processes is, you know, New Zealand, man, do you get all these programs like Remember the 80s, Shameful Secrets of the 90s, How Crap Was Music in the 60s and all that, you know, those sorts of programs?
I don't know. Well, hold on a second. We're coming to a break, Neil. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, in just a few minutes. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood isn't go ahead, make my news. Back in a minute.
Uh-oh. Speedway rappers, but I've never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles, but I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual. I am not yet credible, so until I can say I'm credible, I'll say that I'm incredible, respectable, and professional. Do you
Welcome
me?
Back.
Am I legible? It's time to get down to the question.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Neil Sanders, and we're talking about mind control, all the various forms of mind control. I like the way that you preface this conversation that we're having with the many different types of mind control that there actually are. I was wondering, it actually bears repeating. Could you list again the different types of mind control?
Yes, certainly. I mean, with the sort of military aspect, the first one would be truth serums, the extraction of information via sort of drugs, hypnosis, or electronic means in an interrogation scenario, you know, for espionage purposes. And then the second one would be the flip side of that, which is wiping people's memories, you know, kind of like the Men in Black when they leave the service, or so that they can't, you know, creating amnesic blocks so that they can't be interrogated by the enemy. The third would be what we would loosely call Manchurian candidates, which is the control of people's thoughts or the control of people's actions. And this can be done via hypnosis, via certain drugs, and via certain electronic means, which is called psychotronics, or slow kill, soft kill, or silent kill in the industry. And then the fourth type is a very, very broad spectrum. It's perception management, the creation of norms, propaganda, and social control. And that, as I said before, it sort of runs through the whole gamut of the news media, fashion, education, entertainment, the film industry, and even industry, even sort of how you're expected to behave at work, and what would be sort of what would be an acceptable thing to do at work. For example, it's perfectly okay to destroy 1,000 people's lives or even 1,000 families' lives with the stroke of a pen by redundancies, for example, or by some sort of environmentally unsound business decision. And if you were to stand up against that and say, like, no, that's not on, then you know, the society would say, grow up. That's business. You need to, you know, you need to harden up. This is a dog eat dog world, yada 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 yada, and all that crap. And basically, I mean, that's a very basic example. But people become dehumanized in the workplace. They become so fixated on the mantras and the ideology of this broader entity, which is essentially the company that they work for, which, by the way, doesn't really exist. They're never going to come round to your house and pat you on the back and, you know, give you a back rub and tell you that you've done a really good job, okay? Your manager might tell you that, but essentially, as I say, it's this strata system. And this thing is, aside from the fact that corporations are psychopaths, as I know that you've discussed before, but that's sort of a microcosm of broader spectrums, you know. Everything, genres, if you'd want to become, I don't know, if you want to sort of attach yourself to a certain musical genre or something like that, then you can delineate yourself by wearing certain products. And so essentially you've got your individuality from a sort of mass constructed or mass marketed thing. So you've got this sort of, oxymoronical individual, and it just doesn't work.
I've got a great example here. Me and the missus were driving around and going to my sister's place, right? And we saw these three young guys in a lowered Nissan Skyline playing loud rap music, and they all were wearing hoodies and baseball caps. And we were like, do these people realize that they're a cliche? And we were like, whoa, actually... No, they don't, because they never wonder to themselves, am I a cliche?
I mean, it's inescapable to an extent, because there's no new ideas. Everybody's got sort of people that they admire, and, you know, everybody learns something from everybody else. You've got to. But there comes to a point where people are blind to it, and it comes back to this word again and again and again, or this phrase again and again and again, cognitive dissonance or consensus trance. And people just, this concept that it's like... It's like 1984. It's this double think, but it's a lot more subtle and broad spreading than double think, because it affects people. Don't actively in 1984. You know, people actively engaged in double think. They made out that they knew that this was wrong, but for the sake of the party, they went along with it or whatever. Right? Okay. People have gone past that to the point where they don't even know that they're doing it. This has now become like a reflex action. And it's kind of like a Stockholm syndrome, really. Like, I mean, I was asked by this the other day, why don't people, stand up against, why don't people realize these sort of systems of control and stuff like that? I says, have you ever heard a prostitute badmouth a pimp? Mm. No. They'll tell you that, like, yeah, you don't understand, blah de blah de blah de blah de blah. And this is due to the destruction of the ego. I mean, this, you can bring this back to us, you know, a real... tangible psychological premise. It's almost akin to schizophrenia. You've got these three concepts of the mind in Freudian. You've got the ego, the id, and the superego. The ego is essentially you, the driving force. The id is what wants to do everything, you know, the most sex, the most drugs, the most pleasure. And the superego is essentially societal controls and the mantras that you've learned from your parents, blah, 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 blah.
People have gotten to the point where they think that the ego is a bad thing, you know.
Yeah.
And the reality is, it's actually, you know, your ego is like yourself, you know. I've got a big ego. That's why I'm a radio show host. But it doesn't mean I'm a bad person. I expose scumbaggery and I give a platform to decent people. My ego allows me to do that.
And this is, again, this is about a sort of perception management thing, because the word ego has been played as if it is, you know, from the phraseology, egotistical, or he's got a massive ego, you're too big for your boots, you know, et cetera, et cetera. That's not what it means in a psychological sense, but that is the perception that is sort of the assumption that is taken up by the general population. And again, that's a very clever word thing. Words are incredibly powerful. The use of words is incredibly powerful. I'll give you an example, man. Like, may reduce the visible signs of dandruff flakes. What does that sentence actually mean?
It means it might do something that's visible, but, you know, otherwise there's no freaking guarantees at all.
Well, exactly. The word may is a weasel word, which means that basically it might do this. It might make you fly. It might not, but, you know, it might, so we'll put that on the label. The visible signs of flakes. What's the visible signs of flakes? I know what you think the visible signs of flakes are. What I think the visible signs of flakes are might be a completely different scenario. Help. What does help mean? What does help mean? It doesn't necessarily mean help you to the continuation of the end of your problem. It might just mean give you some advice. And this is these are the tricks that they're not just in advertising, they're in politics and they're in general everyday social. Here's another one. This is one that I found the other day. This particular brand of cigarettes, 100% additive-free natural tobacco. And now look on the side and it says 5 milligrams of tar, 6 milligrams of nicotine. Well, if there's no additives in it, how is that natural tobacco? I'll tell you what they mean by that. When the tobacco is grown, there's no additives added. Afterwards, obviously, when we make the cigarette, we have to put these additives in. But it's sold on the premise that this is a natural thing. And these particular cigarettes are twice as much as normal cigarettes. I mean, even the concept of natural, like, that's a selling point in a lot of foodstuffs, a lot of products. You know, this has got natural ingredients, all organic or whatever. Natural, 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 natural.
Well, see, organic doesn't even mean organic anymore. According to US food code, it's like you can have up to 10% non-organic contamination and still classify something as organic.
Well, I mean, a natural ingredient is not the same as, like, cornflakes have got natural ingredients in, but you'd never find a cornflake in nature. Like, yeah, jam has got natural ingredients.
What have they got?
You might
they got
find jam in nature.
They've got these, what they call natural sweeteners, which are an extracted or natural flavorings. That's the funny one. You know, they extract a chemical compound from a fruit, like a banana or something like that, and then they string it out, and then they artificially replicate it, and then they put it on your Fruit Loops, and they say, see, it's a natural flavoring.
Hey, because we've
synthesized it from something that really exists in nature, which means that what we're giving you ain't freaking natural.
Hey, scorpions and herpes are natural, but I don't want that on my toast, mate. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, this is the point. It's a selling point. It's based on Jungian archetypes that are there to sort of give you. There's another one that's very, very strange, is that if you've got two identical products and one has on the label with added niacin, ricin, anything, iron, anything, there's something in your brain that basically makes you want to go with the thing that seems like the better deal. Even in experiments, even after people have been told that this is a phony bone of contention, this isn't really a selling point. The other product has got the same thing, it's just labeled differently. They will still go for it. And again, this is all perturbed by a very, very disturbing thing, that it is perfectly legal for advertisers and the news media to tell outright lies.
In 2009, the Supreme Court ruled that it's legal for the mainstream news to lie to you. In New Zealand law, it's not unlawful for a politician to knowingly misrepresent their policies during an election campaign or at any other time.
Yeah, it's the same thing with advertising, and it's based on the legal premise that no reasonable person could be expected to believe that the news or advertising, or in the case of politicians, would be truthful, which is such an incredibly Alice in
Wonderland.
Well, I mean, yeah, but it's such a sort of state of affairs that's beyond Brave New World, that's beyond 1984, we're in some sort of nonsensical Alice in Wonderland, smash your head against the wall sort of what the hell is going on? If that
the thing is 1984 and Brave New World were written many, many decades ago. That was the mind control techniques that they knew about then. They've been developing, they've been researching for a long freaking time to come up with even more ways to brainwash and mind control and make people hate each other and fight amongst themselves so that the elite can just basically frack all of us.
I know you've had Jan Irving on before, and he was basically talking about sort of Aldous Huxley's connections through the Century Club, and obviously he's got connections to Andreeja Puharik and all the LSD experiments and suspicious inside knowledge of MKUltra, but he was also connected to the Tavistock Institute. He was the very famous speech that he was making, you know, that in the future I don't see how a pharmacological dictatorship could ever fail, you know, the guy. That's made at the at California University. I think it was Berkeley, but I could be wrong. And it was at the behest of the Tavistock Institute. I mean, he was basically him and an MI6 agent called Michael Hollingshead, along with Frank Baron and Cord Meyer. They were the people that turned Timothy Leary onto LSD. So, and you know, this is, if you want to track this back, this is going back to the Tavistock Institute. The Tavistock Institute is one of these sort of institutes of psychological control that trains military and trains world leaders and trains business people. And that, you know, their mantra is to reduce the population to a childlike state that was called fluidity with the use of trauma from exterior points, because then basically it reduces people to like a fight or flight reflex action, so they've got to go to an authority figure for some help, essentially. And this was the premise of a guy called Kurt Lewin, who was out of the Frankfurt School, which is, again, you know, one of these other influential think tanks. It was essentially disguised as Marxist, but if you look at it, it was financed by British intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just thinking about the conspiracy cafe idea that I had, where you have a whole lot of puns, you know, like all the meals would be named after certain conspiracies. Like you'd have some chicken Tavistock soup, you'd have a Frankfurt School hot dog, or something like that, you know. And the other concept is what I found interesting about what you're saying there is about how putting people into the fight or flight mode and then they rush to authority figures. Well, that actually stopped happening for me when I kind of lost my last job, actually quit my last job, because I suddenly realized that every time I went to an authority figure for help with anything, they would wind up betraying me and or stealing my ideas.
Crabs in a barrel, man, aren't they?
I mean, exactly. And what occurred to me was, you know what? I am my own authority figure. My fight or flight mode, therefore, made me to fly away from employment and start fighting scumbaggery. So it backfired on them, didn't it?
Yeah, good for you, man.
But that's only because I actually thought about it and had the realization about it, you know, and was watching goodness knows how many 160 documentaries or whatever inside of a couple of months, you know. So you have a geometrically massive kind of a woof, a tilt on your brain. And this is another thing: does mind control work as effectively if you're aware that you're being mind controlled?
That's a difficult one to say. Well, obviously, if you're aware of the sort of you know, the techniques and stuff. I mean, how I sort of started to get into it was because I did a degree that covered psychology and media production. And in the media production, you started to notice the overlap and the sort of the use of colors, the use of setting, the use of angles, the use of, you know, Jungian archetypes, this sort of thing. And basically how much they intertwined with particularly Freudian psychoanalysis, and how the brain will decode certain images from media as if you're psychoanalyzing it. So, like, colors are important. Like, you know, red has got certain implications, black, blue has got certain implications, and this is not, you know, only just sort of passed on to you, sort of transgress that out as well. I mean, I'll give you an example. Sleeping tablets are usually pink or blue because there's an association with softness and babies and sleep and that sort of thing. Whereas particularly strong painkillers are usually red or yellow, or very, very harsh drugs are red and black. And sort of there's a placebo effect with that as well in sort of in tests. They'll give to people identical drugs. One will be pink, one will be red, and the one that's pink will send them to sleep quicker. Or they'll be totally, both will be sugar, and they'll say, this one made me drowsy, this one made me...
We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, with us.
I got some so-called friends. They'll smile right to my face. All when my back is turned.
Listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. My guest is Neil Sanders. And, Neil, would you explain to people... there's a couple of things that you were talking about over the break. You're qualified in psychology, film and media studies, and hypnotherapy, and you've also written a couple of books. Where exactly are those books available, and what are their names, and have you got a website?
Oh, yes, I have a website, and thank you. My website is neilsandersmindcontrol.com. The two books that I've written are called Your Thoughts Are Not Your Own, Volume 1 and Volume 2. Volume 2, I don't know if people can see this, like it's a bit, that's Volume 1. It's called Your Thoughts Are Not Your Own, Mind Control, Mass Manipulation and Perception Management. And then Volume 2 is called Marketing, Movies and Music. And Volume 1 basically discusses the sort of nuts and bolts of mind control, the Tavistock Institute, MKUltra, Manchurian Candidates, psychotronics, hypnosis, all the doctors involved, all the various different types of mind control, school shootings, serial killers, and that sort of thing. And the second one, as it says, discusses marketing, movies, music, education, the entertainment industry. And then it sort of rounds up with talking about the LSD explosion and the sort of hippie movement, which I sort of contend was a massive social experiment and sort of an extension of mind control that was done through MKUltra and also through the Tavistock Institute. And as I said, the books are available on those websites, and they're also available on David Icke's website and richplanet.net. What I was trained at university, basically, I did a degree that involved psychology and media production. And like I was saying, it became really sort of apparent that these two fields completely cross over. Like when you're sort of creating a scene or a mise-en-scene within a film, you've got to be very aware of the symbology and the colours and the presentation and the aspects of the characters and, you know, all these various things. And they're based fundamentally on Freudian psychoanalysis and Jungian archetypes. I mean, a very basic example is this. Put the camera up and I look authoritarian. I put the camera down, and all of a sudden I look like, you know, like I'm weak or whatever. And that's a very basic example. Colours, reds make you excited, blues and pinks calm you down. This is why, like, fancy restaurants have always got pastel colours or greens or earthy colours.
Have you noticed that there's not a single fast food restaurant whose colour schemes don't involve red, blue or yellow?
Exactly, absolutely. And it's because these colors excite your subconscious mind. And essentially what they do is they speed up your brain waves, your alpha. Your beta waves would speed up, so essentially you're working at a faster rate. And it's almost like a flight or flight resonance, where basically you go, right, okay, we've got to do this and get out. Other colors sort of affect people in different ways. We would say, like, you know, it's no accident that, like, very strong medicine is red or yellow or black, and sleeping pills are blue or pink because they have connotations and social connotations, but also they have reactive connotations with you know, the visual cortex and the brain, the things that you can't actually avoid. One of the things, burgundy and like green makes you think that stuff is worth a lot more than it is. And I don't know if it's the same in New Zealand, but McDonald's is now sort of like fir green, you know, like a sort of like pine tree green or whatever. And like, it's to try and trick us that what they're shoveling out isn't poison.
And I'm Ron Burgundy.
Now, also on that note, I was just thinking about cats, and there's this brand called Whiskers, I think, and it's purple. And apparently cats just go nuts for purple. And it's the same kind of thing, isn't it?
Well, why are cat foods and dog foods, why are they advertised to look delicious for humans? Like, you know,
it's because it's the humans who buy them.
Well, quite, you know? But, you know, again, that's
the cognitive
dissonance.
The cat doesn't sit there watching TV going, meow, that looks really good for him.
And again, the, you know, listen to the language of the sort of whiskers, full of meaty jugdas, marrow bone jelly. It's got these meaty jellified chunks, or all this, you know, nonsense. It doesn't really mean anything, but it sounds like it means something, doesn't it?
Oh, oh my God, I have the perfect example. There's like it's a Tuck's Meaty Bites or something like that. I saw this ad on TV a while ago, right? And these people. They wake up early in the morning and they go, right, time to go get some Tuck's Meaty Bites. And you wake up, right, time to get some Tuck's Meaty Bites. And then neighbor comes in with a bag of this Tuck's Meaty Bites and he's like, well, why have you got that? Oh, I don't know. And it turns out that the dog was whispering it to them in their sleep, you know? The dog comes up and goes, you're just trying to get Tuck's Meaty Bites, you know? Yeah, isn't that interesting? It's like the dog mind controlling the humans, and it's very funny because you're watching the advertisement, which is a mind control for you being a human, about a dog mind controlling the human to buy the Tuck's Meaty Bites when it's just humans programming you to get your dog the Tuck's Meaty Bites.
It's Why, man? This is, I mean, two things, right? A, that's a genuine thing. That's called psychic driving, and it was practiced by a bloke called Ewan Cameron. In Canada, and you know, we could perhaps talk about that later. The second thing is that all adverts, they're based on fear. What's the point of showing these luxurious treats for your dog? It's the fear that you're not treating your dog well enough. Like, do you get lynx adverts in New Zealand? You know, they sort of spray the lynx effects, and all the birds come flocking and whatnot, and you have to beat them away with a stick that's got stuff on the end of it. And what is that actually saying? You? It's not just saying that if you spray lynx on yourself, you're going to get all these attractive girls. It's basically saying, in a more real sense, if you don't spray lynx on yourself, you're not going to get anywhere near anything like this quality of lady. And be afraid, because this is the norm. Look at this. This is what people want. And if you don't want this, there's something wrong with you. And the other thing is that basically advertisers prey on this fact that there's a schism, as we were discussing earlier, this psychological process, the superego, the ego and whatnot. There is a fundamental schism in that. Everybody wants to go out and just be pure pleasure, pure pleasure. But you understand that, A, you can't do that. B, you'll be punished for doing that. And C, you might, if you are not a psychopath, make other people feel bad for that. So there's a schism in our natural psyche. So what do advertisers do? What advertisers, politicians, news media, etc. do? They suggest that by following a certain lifestyle, by buying into a certain product, by accepting a certain ideology that you attach onto yourself, that you're going to fill that hole, that you're going to make it all right, that suddenly there's going to be some sort of understanding. If you get the house in the suburbs and the 2.4 kids in this particular car, everyone will know that you've made it and you'll feel great about yourself. And that's fine, because then you don't have to worry about life and stuff like this. That's the premise of every single product. I'll give you an example, like Adidas shell toes, right? Okay, cause some people are going, oh, I'm not interested in that. I'm not interested in the house and the car and whatnot. Okay, but different products have got different meanings, different social groups. Adidas shell toes, they might be associated with Run DMC. They might be associated with skateboarding. They might be associated with basketball. They might be associated purely with Adidas, the sports brand. So you've got four separate, very distinct groups of people that would consider themselves completely different from one another, that are using a talisman that has got no actual meaning to define meaning in their own lives. And again, I'm not trying to criticize people, because basically it's like criticizing people for this is like criticizing a fish for being wet. You can't, you know, like, but sometimes you've got to grow legs, evolve, and get out the pond, man.
Yeah. I was just thinking about I went to the Big Day Out quite a number of years ago, big music festival in New Zealand, right? And there was this band called the Murder Dolls. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of them.
Yeah, they're garbage.
very, very, for those of you who don't know Hurlisty, very, very hardcore and demon worshipping kind of thing, you know.
Yeah,
like,
I dedicate this to my favorite person in the whole world, the devil,
you know. And we were watching the C4 coverage of it, you know, it's like our music channels, little AMTV, when we got home, and they were going around asking all these different people what bands they were there to see. And you saw some guy with long black hair, black jeans, and a black Metallica t-shirt. Who are you here to see? Metallica. You know, and you see these two skinny, pasty kids wearing all black and that kind of thing. Who are you here to see? Murder Dolls. Wow. And
I'll put it this way, man. Like, people are easier to control, like, if you know their response to stimulus. So, for example, 14-year-old Murder Dolls fan, if you walked up to them and said, listen to this John Denver record, you know what their reaction is going to be. That's a very glib example. But if you can basically slot people into pigeonholes without their knowledge of it and sell this stuff to them as if it's uniquely for them, and as if it involves them, as if it's speaking directly to them, then you can basically coerce people. It's like explaining to sheep that this pen is just for them. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, I know there's other people in here, but it's just for you. You're just, you know, sharing it for the time being. So this is the point. And the other point that I want to make is that that Ride the Lightning is a brilliant album. So, you know.
Well, I think my point is that people are always obsessed with things that are really freaking just BS, right?
Of course.
And their entire life is devoted to BS, and they never realize that there's any actual potential with them inside without the external BS to direct them. You know, what's my life about? My life is about that stimuli. Is really, so you don't create any stimuli yourself? You don't make any music yourself? You don't design clothes for yourself? You don't create your own businesses? You don't create your own careers? You don't create your own products? You work for somebody else, you listen to somebody else's music, you watch somebody else's television shows, you read somebody else's books, you think other people's thoughts. You don't actually have anything. You have nothing.
Yeah.
That makes you you. Everything that you think is you is somebody else. Okay? That is the crisis that we're dealing with here. A lack of faith in humanity. Not in God. Not in the politicians, but lack of faith in ourselves. We'll be right back after the break with Neil Sanders, ladies and gentlemen.